welcome to the second episode. I'm glad I at least put up the correct amount of fingers when I'm doing that, because of how I usually point around these. It's a little bit reversed, kind of like driving a car. And to be fair, that's not my strongest suit when it comes to driving, the reversing and pocket parking, I suppose, as well. Nevertheless, episode 2 for Ricky's Rants. You are very, very welcome. And we have a little bit of a different intro this time around. It's not as big. I don't have an explanation in the same way as I did last time when I wanted to share with you the idea of the show, the general idea, I guess, and the history and the ambitions of the future. Now, this time around, I'm just going to jump quickly to the most important things about the episode. So, the first episode was perhaps a little bit of everything that's going to pop up from time to time. It might not be the same system, and it might not be the same parts every time. And that's to be fair to me, of course, because I choose, and to you, in case you have opinions about what should be the content on the show, things that you want me to look into over time. So it's a dynamic thing. Secondly, of course, is the part that maybe is the best one. It's that you put enough time to each individual segment so that they are good, no matter which thing they are. It's a wide spectrum of ideas. There might pop up more things in the future. So in that way, they get the nice attention they need so that I can say the things I want and produce the way I want. There was less games in the first episode, so let's do that a little bit more up in this one. So I prepared a discussion about two games that are very, very interesting for the modern systems, I would say. One of them is pretty much up there around with my favorite games of all time, so it's going to be fun to talk a little bit about that. We also have a very, very big run through of games to break through. That will be the brunt of the video, the meat, the biggest part, if you will, where I will talk mostly about Game Pass, this particular episode. But that's not to say that some of the parts have controversy. I'm having a bit of rants going on in this episode that I have stacked up for you to enjoy, and I think the confession is going to be the most controversial topic in this episode, and perhaps also the most interesting for at least some of you that checked out the episode back in the day when I did the first Ricky's Review show. And I guess that's a part of the history, and it's not a shocker that the confession part will have some history segments to it. But with all that said, I think we should just jump right into the action, and I'm welcoming you to the second episode of my show, Ricky's Rants. It is time for me to tackle a subject that I think a lot of people on the web has actually been already, to a certain degree, been on and off about. It might not come to a shock for most of you guys that mostly Nintendo has always been a favorable console for me. While I have played a lot of games, for instance, on the PC, and I think that the most time I spent with games still has been on the PC. I consider myself a fan of the Nintendo Entertainment System and all of its sequels. So it shouldn't come to a surprise that it looks a little bit like this, and I have this area here, whoosh, dedicated to the Wii that I enjoyed a lot, and also now very recently then with the new Switch and even the Zelda fascination, which is something that I also share, of course, with a lot of people out there. And so this last 10 years, it's been a roller coaster for fans of Nintendo. from anything from the Wii that was just a great success and introduced so many new things, but also the fact that they decided to develop in a very different direction than its competitors such as Sony and Microsoft. To cut this all short, because it's not a history about the Nintendo situation, Wii U dipped a bit and now we're up again with the Switch being a great success. And of course, the franchises that helped Nintendo at every time when they release a system is the two subjects that I'm going to talk about here and compare. One of their franchises has that distinct main character that's loved by pretty much everybody who enjoys video gaming. You already know which one I'm talking about, of course. And the second one is the grandest adventure that you have had in video gaming, if you've been a fan such as me from the Nintendo Entertainment System all the way back to even before I was born in the 80s. And so I think it comes to no surprise that Nintendo launched these games yet again. And they keep producing these games with, of course, great result each and every time. And the Switch is no difference. But the subject is, of course, which one of these two games are the better? And I'm holding up here for you guys who are just listening, the Mario Odyssey game for the Nintendo Switch, which came out not at the start of the console, a little bit in, and I got it on release date. We are also going to compare that then to the more favorable one if you go for what people on the internet mostly are talking, the Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. I'm sitting here with two, holding up the Wii U version and the Switch version. And this one was a launch game, which was a brilliant move from Nintendo, because I think this game alone sold the Switch quite heavily on the market, and the Wii U version not as maybe as popular, but still great of Nintendo to have such a version. And I guess it's kind of because they started working on the game already on the Wii U, but decided to release it as a release game. And as I said, most people in this case, they consider Breath of the Wild being the superior game of these two. That it's just like perfection for a lot of gamers out there. And the reason I'm putting this up on my channel for the second episode here is, of course, that I compare them and I feel completely opposite, which is where I take my stance now. So that said, they are both great games, and if you watch the first episode, you also know that it took me quite a while to explore one of these, in this case the Zelda game. Not because it's necessarily that much longer, because it kind of depends a little bit on which direction you take with the game. I think introductions to both games are in order for me to continue. So, we'll start with Super Mario Odyssey. This game does not do anything that previous Super Mario games has not done. It is, again, a 3D world platformer with Mario going after Peach. The story doesn't take that many new directions, or pretty much none at all. But it does introduce, like most Mario games in 3D, does one main big mechanic which everything circles around. And in this case, it's the hat-throwing ability, which in turn also attaches to things and makes Mario become different characters. We have had suits many times before, we've had items, but this time you just throw your hat at something and this automatically makes you take up that character. Like could be a dinosaur, could be a frog, for instance. And you span the Odyssey through so many different locations, and the most talked about is probably the new Donk City, which also introduces the Donkey Kong tribute with major character Daisy, that hasn't been in a Mario game for a very long time, and a very catchy soundtrack that's the main theme, I suppose, of the Super Mario Odyssey game. And everything from the Bowser's castle to a big ass what's it called? Swamp, I suppose. The toxic area, where you also have a lot of the old school Super Mario enemies. This game I'm gonna explain a little bit more what I think is so great with it later, but this game also got a tremendous score and has so many units as well. Might not be one of those titles that brought people to buy the Switch, because most of them probably already had one at the point, but it just continued the Nintendo Switch success from the, for instance, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. Now, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, on the other hand, takes a little bit of a different approach than some of the other Zeldas. This time around, it's an open-world concept. Now, with open-world, I mean it's a big map that you can choose the direction you want to go. You have your main mission, of course, to save Zelda, as you usually do in these games. The saving is a Nintendo state that they're probably not going to get away from as long as they make the popular franchises, because we have grown used to do these missions and save these princesses and main characters. And I suppose that you can ignore this, like you can in most open world games where the time stands still and stuff like that. But it introduces the open world concept to the Zelda franchise, and of course, in my opinion, it is one of the better open world games out there, if not maybe the best one if you look at all aspects of the game. It takes place in a new world, a very colorful world. You can see an example right over there about the main characters that I have up on my shelf, and a very blue, fresh, wild feeling to it, where Ganon is under attack. I was gonna say he's attacking the main castle area, the Hyrule Castle, in the center of this world, where you take your stance, and that's kind of where you're heading at the very end of the game. It's 100 years after the Calamity Wars, where you step by step unfold the story of this game. Anyways, people generally say that The Legend of Zelda, it just takes this whole, you know, open world concept to become such a new height, and it takes it in a different direction. So what I am going to say when I'm comparing these two that I'm again holding up is that they are both great games, and if you are more singular in your taste, if you want the more adventure style games, then of course the Zelda game is going to win you over. But if you want a more casual kind of experience, or the more general average game, the collection, the platforming, and of course then the Mario game is going to be there. But for gamers like me who play so many different things, the comparison is interesting, because there are so many different aspects of it. And the most interesting one that is usually used to define why they think the Breath of the Wild is such an important game is the fact that this is the way that Zelda was meant to be from the very start. In the essence, the Zelda Breath of the Wild, you have the fact that you just go out there and explore a world, which is, if you look back into what Zelda was on the Nintendo Entertainment System many, many, many years ago when they launched, it was about you just spawning in this world. There was a big map with things and objects that you can interact with, and dungeons that you could find and liberate, and then eventually win over the end boss of Ganon. And you just did this with the sword that you got in the first cave. And it's kind of the same here. You just step out into this world and you grab whatever you can, the sticks and the stones, and you learn all these stuff to eventually go on a journey that's going to take you to the center and where Ganon is. They do, however, change a couple of things with the formula. Of course, it's not linear, and you don't have an order to do things. It also doesn't give you the same types of dungeons with a boss at the very end. If you don't count the divine beasts, which there are four of, you don't have to do them, for instance. It only gives you like a bonus at the very end of the game. You don't have like a sword and a shield that you're always sticking with. Instead, you have tons and tons of different weapons that you can sometimes find, sometimes you buy them, and so on. There's a lot of quests and mini quests and all kinds of stuff that you can do on the way, which again, it's this adventure. It's like an area where you can be, like a circle where you can be and do whatever you want in that area and explore, which is kind of, as I said, what they wanted to do. And they have, of course, succeeded in doing this. No doubt about it. It just comes with some drawbacks as well. The fact that open worlds, which I've said before, they usually come with such a big area that it's hard to know what you're actually supposed to do, or even feel like you have a goal for yourself to actually do something. This doesn't happen as much in Zelda, but it does happen. It also kind of feels like if you're looking for a more classic Zelda experience, the way you've thought about the 3D Zeldas the last, you know, console generations, you're gonna get disappointed at some of the areas because it is more concentrated around those things on only certain points in the game, and you might even have to be forced to do other things to get there. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's bad, it just means it's different. And it's a hit and miss, but most people have accepted this and thinks that Breath of the Wild takes a lot of the concept from modern other games and utilizes it to make Zelda a greater experience for once. And I don't disagree necessarily, even though me, I'm not so much for the whole open world concept, so it's very hard for me to like act, you know, to see the value of going in that direction with it. But on the other hand, I do want Zelda to become that thing that it was meant to be. I want Zelda to be that adventure where you just open up a door and you're stuck in a 20, 30 hour of non-stop adventure, which is sometimes even accomplished within the more closed boundaries that they've had in the other Zelda games. It's kind of like an art of making you believe like you are making choices, but you're actually directed. And sometimes the linear approach can give you an experience that is just as good as, you know, you choosing to go wherever you want to. Another thing people are saying is that many of the systems has been refined, and you're now able to do so many things that you weren't before, and you can constantly find new things to do. And this, I on the other hand think has drawbacks because they are not as fleshed out as they would have to be. I found so many things that I just did not like when I played this, and I think this made it so much harder for me to accept that other people just showered praise over this game, right? I don't think the combat is that much fleshed out. I don't think that the abilities are that interesting, and I don't like the system of weapons constantly getting destroyed. But I do understand that that's also something that gives you the option to find other alternatives of fighting and other ways of exploring, and you know, you should always have an array of different weapons, items, and stuff so that you can constantly swap around and adjust, put on a winter coat when you're up in the mountains where it's cold, or put on lighter clothes if it's too warm, and so on. It does come with its positive sides, but for the most part, I don't think that it's actually fun. And that's a very big drawback. If you do enjoy it, I mean, that can, of course, be argued for how it is enjoyable. But if you do enjoy the way that they've done it, it doesn't necessarily either mean that it's 100% done. It just means that you can see those things and you want those things from a Zelda game. Same with me. I do want it to feel like you want to make these choices. It just doesn't work as well as I would hope to, and that's because they're scoping on such a big area, right? If it's detailed like it is with so many other games in the franchise, they usually become more fleshed out. Third, and actually the biggest problem, mostly with the Wii U version of the game, is the fact that the controls isn't that good. Like, you have so many different buttons that do so many things and so many items and so many abilities, it is very confusing. And of course, if you play more and more and more, you get better at it. It's just that I feel like this is an adventure that you're supposed to be able to grasp as you go out there, and it doesn't feel natural for me, no matter which console I actually ended up with, even though I prefer it on the Switch because of how it runs, but also because of the controller that I'm using there with my Pro controller that works so much better for me. With these three main areas not working so properly, I don't feel like this necessarily is a step up for the franchise, but it is a great game. I can understand why it sells consoles, I can understand why it's a product of its time, and I can understand why Zelda is an important game that can span so many great things. And it's the startup for something new in the Zelda franchise that can become so great, because if they flesh it out more and more and they create sequels, it can become very, very good. And that's the big difference, which is why I think the Super Mario Odyssey game is so, perfect, pretty much. It's the game on this system, the best Switch game. That I'm saying that right now, and I have many of the major titles. I actually prefer that Zelda right there over the Breath of the Wild for me, because this is like a top-down Zelda made in such a great way. But I'm going to talk about that one some other time, and I'm of course talking about the remake of Link's Awakening. But also there we have the Fire Emblem game, which is a great example of a massive product from Nintendo that I'm also going to talk probably about at some other time. But I still believe that Super Mario Odyssey is the way to go, and it's actually the way to go in many ways when you're looking at which one is better, because this is the best game for the system. It does not do like Zelda. It does not take a new concept. It's not evolving into something new at all. It is taking the same concept and making it better yet again. And always when I play a game, I held Super Mario Galaxy as one of the best games ever made, and for some reason they managed to constantly develop new ways of playing. Just by adding the hat feature, you're getting so many new options, and the puzzles and the way the level design is just makes you feel like you're happy and evolving constantly, even though it is still just Mario with his three jumps and his running and solving problems the same way as before, which means that it's very easy to pick up and play, and the same old style of 3D Mario gameplay. They've fleshed out all of the camera controls, they made the movement from one world to the other interesting, they made the collecting even bigger, because it's so many different moons that you can collect in this game, much more so than when I started playing the 3D Marios, which was in the Mario 64. 120 stars, I think it was, or something like that, in the different paintings you jump into. The hub world in that world has been expanded upon with you flying around in your spaceship here, if I can call it that, your hat ship. Each level spawns minor other levels. It's kind of like a hub world as well, and each level has so many different bosses and fun, you know, puzzles and hidden objects to explore. In the same way that the other Marios has before. The graphics are updated, matching the console, and it's running just stunningly on the Nintendo Switch, and it produces such a great-looking, technically advanced game that it's hard to know how they get all of that on this little Switch console that it's just a full HD console connected to a little dock to your TV, right? I mean, it's a handheld system that you're running both these games. It's impressive in so many ways, and while I do feel like Zelda's drawbacks that I cannot find in Super Mario Odyssey, there are some probably, it's something that you could argue about, and I do know that when people look at these games, they usually compare like which one has the best soundtrack. Well, I believe they're both extremely good for the product that they are. They are both really good. Which one has the best sound design? Well, again, Nintendo's, it just works. The best graphics. They are both extremely pretty games with good color palettes. They run very well. Again, slight edge here for Super Mario Odyssey on the system that runs quite a little bit better, but it's also scoping over a little bit less, so it's unfair in a way to do the running thing there. Now, I'm not talking about the running of the characters, but slightly better still. With that in mind, slightly better still. The stories work for what they are trying to accomplish, right? They are both the way that you would want them to be. It takes the concept of what you want them to be. It kind of feels like they're running full circle with Super Mario Odyssey, and it's going to be so hard to follow up on this 3D Mario, but let's just face it. I said the same when I saw Super Mario Galaxy, and then they made Galaxy 2, which, of course, I wasn't as fan of as I was with the first one, but they're both great, great titles. And Odyssey now, again, even better. And considering that the Wii U didn't have the same 3D Mario, it had more of the 2D Marios, I would say that it doesn't count that they skipped one generation there. However, I am sure that Nintendo is going to come back with yet another 3D Mario, and it's going to feel even better than all of the others again. And they're all still enjoyable. I believe that it is near to impossible to always feel like you're refreshing yourself, and I guess that's also why it takes so much time for them to still make just a 3D platformer, because I mean there's other companies out there trying to accomplish the same thing but not succeeding. It's actually been a resurgence of the collectathons genre, with Jokalaylee being out there, the Lucky's Tale being out there, but they're not there. It's not the Nintendo stamp seal quality, right? This is why I believe that Super Mario Odyssey, by just making it what they know they wanted it to be, and they're perfecting it, they are just superior. And in this case, the comparison, even though they're two different, very, very different games, right? Super Mario Odyssey just is superior because it knows what it's doing, and it's doing it at the very top level of that. And it just cannot be compared to anything else. You know that if you're buying Super Mario Odyssey and that's what you would want from your game, you're getting your money's worth on each and every single part of that money. And you cannot top that. It's a 10 out of 10 game. And that's why I believe I wanted to talk about this, because many people hold Zelda being brave, doing something different, taking in and so, like this concept and expanding on it, right? That's making it something greater. But here's the thing: Super Mario never really did need to do that. They just needed to do a great version of Super Mario, and they succeeded the expectations. Even they went above and beyond. Where I do feel like Zelda, it is pretty much what I expected. It had some ups and some downs, right? You might live with some of the flaws, right? You might feel like some of the flaws are okay for you, and then hold this and regard it so much higher than I do. But even with all of that said, I don't feel like it can top the brilliance and the sheer quality of each and every aspect that's so perfected with Super Mario Odyssey. If you're just gonna do a value quality comparison, then yes, it still might be that you should buy the Zelda Breath of the Wild. But luckily, if you're like me, you want to play all of these types of games, and you like so many different types of games, you have two stunningly excellent alternatives. And both of these, by each respective year and genres, could be Game of the Year across all of the platforms for that time. And they are products that, just like with the first Zelda and the first Super Mario Brothers on the Nintendo Entertainment System, is going to be remembered in history as some of the greatest games of all time. And Nintendo Switch top 5 games, well, they are up there. It's just going to be like that. For me, maybe not. I'm going to come to that. So that's why I also think that it was interesting to say that this is the winner between the two of them. This is Super Mario Odyssey. It is better. But where do I rank my games? We'll look into that maybe in some other segment of the show. For now, however, that's where I will leave this discussion and presentation of these two excellent Nintendo Switch games as we roll over to the next segment of the show. So, something that I really needed to do since basically I stopped making my first effort on YouTube with my Ricky's Reviews, is explain something that I got a question a couple of times at that when I did those back in the day that regarded the show and how I made my reviews. So I thought I was gonna address it at that time, but I didn't. So this next part is kind of doing that in a confessive kind of way. It's a light confession this week around. So opinions about video games has swapped a little bit its main focus. Today you're looking at a video game from many more angles, which was kind of how I reviewed games, and the reason why I'm now talking about games in a different way, because I do believe that the reviews that was necessary then didn't exist. And I thought I wanted to do a different take on it, today people are actually making those kinds of reviews. They are taking into aspect so many things like how it runs on a different system. There's many people who do low spec running systems. There are people who review mostly for story, who review without scores, who review with the focus on like telling you how they feel about it from their perspective only, how they feel about it from you know, a general consumer, or just from the technical perspective. And some people, of course, do it from many aspects. And the main reviewers are they're very much similar to how they were. So you have all of the versions of how to review games. That said, one of the points by doing the way I did it was to put up a perspective on a game from different kinds of states, right? How do you do that was something a lot of people said. And if you don't like the type of game, then yes, of course, it's going to affect. And it always will do. But I did try to at least play games that I should like. Games that were within the area of something that was interesting to me. I always handpicked the games on my review shows, and of course I sometimes got really good grades and sometimes I got really bad grades. This was the kind of spectrum I wanted. So my confession this time around is regarding the fact that some people asked, did you even give it a try? One of the games that popped up as one of my more negative ones that got a lot of attention from chat and friends was The Witcher 2, which I gave a 3 or a 4. I should have done my research before I did this episode. However, I still stand by that. It is quite a terrible game in so many ways. I have changed my view on the first Witcher game. It's playable. Okay. This is also going to be controversial because a lot of people praise both number 1 and 2. They are not good. And I am going to tackle Witcher 3 soon because it's going to come in the run through for this week because I'm actually on The Witcher 3 right now. So with that said, do you even play all your games? The confession is not fully through all the times, no. I do have the urge to always try and finish everything I start, but I don't always do that. I had the idea that I wanted to make sure to actually give each game so much time that I could review them properly, though. And that said, maybe sometimes that is something that I had to make a choice for, and it didn't always become as good as it might have had to be. When it comes to, if you give an example, I gave a 2 out of 10 for a game that barely ran on my computer at that time, but it was a 2D platformer, while some 3D expensive on your hardware games ran so much better, such as Civilization, League of Legends. I gave this game bad score not only because of how it ran. I gave it a bad score because I truly felt like there was very little redeeming qualities, right? The Witcher was another example. It just baffled me how The Witcher could put you in a tutorial mode without you knowing it and choosing which part of it you are going to start by giving you a story choice. It didn't explain controls. Sometimes controls popped up, but sometimes not. The controls, if you chose the first part of the tutorial, which you didn't know if you did or not, did pop up the controls and did teach you how to play. It gave you a menu that was messy. It gave you a combat that was uninspired. I mean, there were so many things, right? I'm not going to do the full review on that one, but I stopped, right? I had enough material, as you have seen on, if you saw the episode, I had enough material to talk about the game properly. Like, I feel like there was many aspects of The Witcher gone through in so many ways that it was more thorough than most other reviews of the time for me. So it wasn't sloppy job. But I do confess in the fact that I did not finish The Witcher 2. And a lot of the games that I did for my review show, and even without reviewing them, I did not finish. I don't always go through. The same way as maybe I don't finish a book, right? And I do try to have the, like if I start something, a movie for instance, I try to finish it and then give my opinion about it, right? And the idea is that you can't really Give an opinion unless you've given it a real thorough time, if you have given it all that is needed to actually understand the product that's being shipped out to you, right? Especially when it comes to art or when it comes to cultural phenomenon as games or, you know, movies or TV shows and stuff like that. So, yes, it did feel a little bit weird maybe to confess the fact that I don't always do that. However, an interesting point when it comes to this is the fact that recently there's been so many things happening. I'm going to use the example of The Last of Us, and I want to talk about The Last of Us, and I thought, what am I going to do to be able to talk to this? Well, of course, I'm going to confess how I see things, right? That was my perspective and the way I shoehorned myself into this subject. So we're not really fully done yet, because I think that even The Last of Us 2 had redeeming factors in what happened online. Metacritic score just plummeted while the regular critic score just went sky high, right? Here's the fact. The Metacritic's one might be bombing, right? They might tell you something. And that's the thing. A review can, even if it's such a small little note or just a review bomb, it can still tell you something. There's something up here, right? You have to take into consideration all the things when you're buying a product. When you have spent the money and you actually own the product, you cannot really go back and say that you did, like, you can, of course, but it's on you, right? You bought the product. You cannot go back and say that you were tricked if you have taken part of some of these things. If there is no reviews out there at all, then you can get tricked. That's just the way it is. The Last of Us 2 was controversial in the fact that it took so many aspects of the first game and made a very decent product, right? But they made so many choices that upset a lot of people. Even before the game was even released, the game had controversy around it. And spoilers! In the game, they are tackling a lot of story elements that will, in many ways, upset a lot of people. There are character deaths, and there is a main character from the first game, which makes no sense. They change so many things, right? And then you would say, well, is it still a decent product, right? Depending on where you're standing. Yeah, it could still very well be. Me, I have not played this game, but I want to talk about it. But the things that I've read about it is enough to make me know this game is not going to be touched by me. I'm not playing The Last of Us 2 because of the sole reason of what some of these reviews are telling me. The bombing tells me more than the people who are on the spectrum of 7, 8s, 9s, and 10s. I don't believe that they have taken into aspect everything they need to, but even if they have, it could be also just a personal opinion for some of them. But for me, it's the opposite spectra. I am on the personal opinion that you cannot do certain things to your franchise if you are a fan of that franchise. Because the only way I can inflict some kind of opinion when it comes to cultural stuff is if I buy or not buy. I am not buying a product that changes so many things and tries to do certain things with their franchise that goes away from where I want it to go. I'm not your customer anymore. I was the customer here, and I hate that you have taken everything from this one and gone in this direction. I guess you could say the same with any franchise that tries out a very different approach. But here's the fact. You could then say, well, the review bombers, the people who just value the game on this one aspect, or the ones who give it a bad grade because of some minor part that they don't like, it could be very, very, very important to them. And it is something that, of course, should not always be taken into the account that it's the most main thing for you to care about when you're buying the game. But it is, in fact, something that should be considered and should be out there. I don't think you should censor the fact that someone wants to throw in a very easy grade, even if they just played it an hour, or even not, maybe not even play it at all. Because in my opinion, I'm not going to give you a score. I'm not going to be one of the review bombers, but I'm going to warn you about The Last of Us 2, because I, as a consumer, do not want to pay, and I hope you are not going to pay either, because if you like number one, there are things in number two that is going to be very unlikable. If you don't want to spoil it, I did a spoiler claim before I started talking about this, but if you don't want to spoil it, then you cannot find this before it's too late. They are going to go in a kind of direction of an agenda. They have ideas that they want to push through on this game the way that they have decided to. And in that case, they needed to change so many things. I respect the fact that you are the owner of the product, but I don't think that they then shouldn't be without blame when criticism pops up, even in the smallest form as a little line, or an unfinished review, or a small review of just a couple of hours, or a minor part, or until the part where someone just said, I'll throw in the towel. And that is the example that I'm making to put my point through to you guys, because when I'm confessing that, no, I did not always finish the games, but I always try to make my way of reviewing things, looking at things, analyzing things, my way of telling you something. And I think I wanted you to have the quality stamp of approval that, you know, I've been very thorough with it before I do certain things with the product. And it always will have a certain value when you find different people sharing something with it about the product that you are looking into. So review bombing and other things of this should be a product of a greater scene of looking at something. And I don't think you should take it lightly, but I don't think you should censor it. I don't think that people that are like me, that decided to release a Witcher review without actually finishing the game, is not an opinion that is not to be taken. It is an opinion that should be taken with the fact that that has not happened. If you really want to know if the person finished the game or not, if that's the most important aspect for you, you should always then find that out. If it's impossible to do so, maybe you should look into a couple more reviews or other opinions. And the same thing goes for The Last of Us, of course. But I hereby confess that no, for many of the episodes, hopefully not too many, and for a lot of the games that I played throughout all of my years of a gamer since I was a teenager somewhere, no, I did not finish every single game that I started playing and had opinions about. Yeah, and I think that's where I put the dot here, without going too deep into the Last of Us and that whole whoosh that went out there on the internet. But it was something that I still needed to at least somewhat address. Now, let's go on to a more interesting depth of another subject. Stick around.
All right, so for this next segment here, I am trying out something a little bit different. As you can see, I'm using wireless, and I'm also using a different screen capturing method. So it's going to look a little bit different and feel a little bit different. Hopefully the image is smoother, like when I'm doing these kinds of things. So we'll see about that, which is the main reason why we're doing this. It's a test, but not for you who are listening in on the podcast version, however, but it is the main reason we're testing this is because I would like to move around when I'm doing the run-through, which I presented in the first episode as well, and then I'm going to walk around a little bit as well as I'm going to talk to you through this microphone. So wireless would be optimal if I could do, and I'm gonna look a little bit like this when I'm doing it. So I'm hoping that perhaps this could be an okay version as a test out. It's gonna sound very different for you on the podcast, however, and it's just this one time if it doesn't work out well. But leave the comments, do send me information about how you feel about it, and then we'll see if this is something that I might try to do again. I could technically also use the same microphone as last time and do some standing segments like that time as well, but I want to try some different versions. Anyways, we have a lot of gaming to talk about, so let's go on and do that. As I mentioned in the last episode, we have a segment where I will talk about the games that I've been playing, that have been played through, and I'm going to give you some recommendations about those games, and also at the same time I'm going to do a little bit of a run-through of what I'm playing right now, And I was actually thinking a little bit there that we are looking at quite a lot of games. Now I got an idea that there was a couple that I actually also forgot to mention here now. The games that I used to play, but I chose not to talk about because maybe I didn't feel like I wanted to talk too much about them. Anyhow, there's going to be quite a lot of Game Pass related stuff. So, for most of these games, these are the ones that you can actually play for yourself as well. So, I would say that for a pretty decent monthly cost that Microsoft offers, you can have a bunch of these games that I, in some cases, recommend and some don't. So, let's begin. Blazing Chrome. That one was mentioned briefly in the last episode. Now, Blazing Chrome is not on the Game Pass anymore. It was phased out on both PC and on the Xbox. But nonetheless, I'm going to talk a little bit about this. It's not an expensive game. The Blazing Chrome game is basically this old school Contra-inspired shooting game where you take on a role of one of these characters that you have and go through five levels in four of them. You can choose in which order you want to do them. And then you encounter the last stage with some of the boss rushes that accustoms with that stage. It's a pretty quick game and very, very challenging. Just the same way as Contra, it challenges you to various situations in this fast-paced run-and-gun kind of games that you might have played before, which is its biggest drawback but also one of the biggest strengths, because if you know these kinds of games and you like them, you know you will like Blazing Chrome. It does feature a couple of things differently. For instance, you can do a melee attack once people get close to you, and as well as that, you also have some more aiming options than you did, especially if you compare to the NES version of the game, Contra. The Super Nintendo version is more similar, whereas it also combines some elements of Sega games with especially the soundtrack and how some of the things feel in the game when you, like with some of the graphics and such things. So it's a little bit of a mashup, but in its core, it definitely feels like they have taken the essence of these kinds of things, put it into a modern game with some more modern solutions. But you will fairly feel familiar if you face this challenge. So Blazing Chrome actually gets a thumbs up from me. I recommend this highly for action enthusiasts and people who like retro style games. For everybody who are scared of challenge, there are a couple of different modes you can do, but however, it is going to teach you to play safe. It is going to kill you many, many, many times over. It might be a little bit troublesome for some people to get through Blazing Chrome, and so it is not re widely recommended to everybody, but it gets a thumbs up for quality in so many aspects from me. And if you're a fan of these types of games, it's a must play at some point. And one game that I didn't talk much about yet is I'm also running, I have a strategy of running like maybe like a main game, some multiplayer games, and some smaller games. This next one is a multiplayer game that you can find on your Microsoft Xbox. State of Decay. It is basically a third-person zombie shooter game that you can play together with people, and it puts you in the control of a camp in any of these four different areas, and there's a lot of zombies and some special zombies that also gets encountered, and you're just trying to expand on your camp, building new facilities as you get more resources and go on raid runs and some missions. All of this while playing with your friends. This game is a very much hit and miss thing. For me, it was very interesting to have a game to play very casually online with a lot of friends, which is its biggest benefit. It is kind of nice looking, but that's kind of where all my praise goes away as well. It has quite stupid dialogue, not much of a story. The gameplay is very flawed and bugged, and I do feel like they would have needed loads of more time to develop this further. There are also some gameplay mechanics that just doesn't make any sense. Like for instance, one person's camp is the only camp available in multiplayer, and not to mention that that person is the only one building and the only one in control of all the resources, meaning the others are just aiding that player when they come into your server. And the server system works kind of so-so. All in all, if you can withstand a lot of these bugs and you just want to have fun with friends shooting zombies, which the game really does well, it does offer that pretty good. I would say State of Decay is not something that would compare to maybe some of the biggest games out there if you're looking for this type of thing. But on the other hand, it's included in the Game Pass. That's a very big strength. The idea of having such a game on Game Pass is something that I think Microsoft would actually do very well to understand the value of, and I hope they will put on more types of games of the same, like State of Decay. And it does bring promise to like some of the upcoming Xbox One X games that we are looking into. State of Decay is, of course, getting a sequel there, but I'm hoping that they have taken and learned from this experience, then, if they are going that way. State of Decay gets a... if you aren't really looking for a multiplayer-style game to play with your friends, you can already scrap it, it's nothing special. If you're looking for story and bits of quality, you're also going to pass on this one. However, if you just want quick multiplayer action with your friends and you already have Game Pass, for instance, then it's definitely something worth checking out. I'm just going to do a little quick thing here. Nothing that you guys will keep track of, I hope. Nightfall, I mentioned. Nightcall. It was a taxi driving kind of game. I'm not going to go through too much about this one again since I talked about it last time. I will, however, follow up on what I said. And this game is not so good. I would actually say bad. It would need a bit more tempo, it would need more interesting kinds of characters, and it would need voice acting. These three things would make this game quite much better. I wouldn't say that it might be a great game or anything just because of these three things, but at least then it would be much more worth the time. As it stands now, you just kind of read stories and it gets droning, and I didn't feel like I had control on anything. And once the case was solved in this kind of detective style game where you're looking for a murderer and your own assailant, it really boggled down to something that I didn't really fancy, like, my opportunities. I didn't really know what I was doing, and it just felt like I got mashed with text and text and text, and it just went on. The segments of graphics as well that is shown in the game is so random that I just feel like it's a mess. But some potential, some ideas, it drew me in and gave me some promise here, but in the end it was very, very disappointing, actually. Nightcall, that is on many systems, also featured on the Game Pass for PC and Xbox right now, gets the thumbs down. And because of that, I was looking for some kind of detective-style game. I was hoping that perhaps I could find something that would fill in this void, because the idea of playing a detective game, I mean, many of us are interested in this kind of genre, and I am weak for detective-style things such as in TV shows and movies, so I thought, you know, why not? enter the Xbox Game Pass game Kona. All of these are also available pretty cheaply on Humble as well as Steam. And you can probably find yourself a deal on them, but if you're on Xbox Game Pass, they are there as well. Kona draws you in with this detective story and a noir-styled narrative that speaks above your character, and it's voiced really, really well. It takes part of the in this ice landscape in Montreal of Canada, and you befriend this area, I guess you could say, or you just adventure down in this area. And the idea is that you're drawn there because someone has asked you to come and solve a case for them. They have something that you as a private detective needs to come and help with. But once you reach there, a lot of things happen. As the case wanders on in this area, after a while it starts getting a little bit stale, and many of the things are just puzzles, like a kind of like a point and click adventure. So it draws you in with the promise of something that gives you this nice little notebook, some kind of survival-ish styled bars for you to you know, keep track on. But in the end, it just kind of becomes a little bit in between many things. At the very, very end of the story, the game changes its pacing a little bit, which was refreshing. But on the other hand, as that happens and reveals the big secret of the game, it turns, spoiler warning, it turns into a horror game. And while I do think that was an effective, I didn't you know, expect it to be so like right out there. It just didn't make much of it, and they didn't have the game to support this. It would have been so much better would they have gone with the more narrative heavy kind of investigate and play a detective in a noir story set up in the cold north. Missed opportunity, perhaps. I do feel Kona could cater to a lot of fans of adventure style first person game, but on the other hand, it does have a lot of flaws, drawbacks. It's quite short. I would not recommend this. It gets the thumbs down from me. So with Kona gone and out of the way, I was still on the hunt for a detective game. And so if you are looking for such a game, I would say L.A. Noire is probably the game for you to visit. But I have not played this one in quite a while. But since I was so into detective games, I thought I'd give you a little bit of a heads up of what game I would recommend. Remembering this game back from the PS3 era, it featured a facial recognition thing that you know, gave you expressions that you could use to doubt and stuff in interrogations. But to be fair, it hasn't aged super well, but the gameplay is still solid. It has a nice featured story and a setting that just pops out kind of good, and it never really goes away from what you expect. So if you're looking for that kind of gameplay style, then L.A. Noire is the game to go for you, in my opinion. However, I do have some positive ones as well. Starting with Dragon Quest XI for the Nintendo Switch. It is coming for Game Pass eventually. Dragon Quest XI is phenomenal. I'm not going to spend too much time talking about this one, but it's a colorful RPG set in this large world. The Dragon Quest series has gone side to side with the Final Fantasy series for as long as I can remember. And while I wasn't a big fan on the old Dragon Quest, I did do a little bit of Dragon Quest 8 that came for the PlayStation 2. Now, to be fair, it was kind of challenging and a little bit grindy at that time. Dragon Quest 11, on the other hand, introduces so many new types of gamers to this, you know, tremendous series. It has, as I said, colorful graphics. It's music, which is fully orchestrated on the fully orchestra on the Nintendo Switch. This does bring the game's biggest strength up to levels that was you know, unexpected. It does draw you in. I mean, when that fanfare comes at the beginning, I was sold. It gave me goosebumps, and it did not disappoint. The gameplay supports this kind of bombastic feeling that Dragon Quest invites you to. So with such good music, such good graphics, and such good gameplay, with its legacy and all its characters, there's very few things that is not good with Dragon Quest XI, and this could very well be the best game that I'm playing 2020. And I know it's not released on 2020. It will be released on Xbox Game Pass on 2020, so if you haven't already played it and you're on that service, do yourself a favor and start that up when it pops up. It is so many hours of just pure fun and so many cool characters and storylines that it's just, you know, one of those must-play games. If you doubt, however, that you would have the time or don't like the style of, you know, turn-based combat, however, then of course it doesn't offer anything new. If you've seen Dragon Quest games before or Final Fantasy 7, 8, 9, that era of style gameplay, then Dragon Quest XI is just not going to be for you. But I would say it is one of those top games out there that, you know, you would do yourself a favor to put in your chosen system, and it's out for so many different ones. I even think I have a Dragon Quest XI somewhere. I actually do. The PlayStation version of the game right here I'm holding up. Though this one is not fully with the orchestra music, it has some kind of MIDI soundtrack, which is of course the reason why I instead chose to play it on the Nintendo Switch, which is by far the more definitive edition, and that's the one I would recommend highly. But the game there is probably solid too, it just won't have that little edge that it's needed. And another really brilliant game that I'm going to talk about next is Detroit Become Human. This game is pretty much the collection of all the David Cage, I think his name is, games before. Heavy Rain, Beyond Two Souls, and those games. It finishes up a lot of uneven edges that they had left on the gameplay from the other games. It kind of mashes some of the elements from both of these two, which were a little bit different from each other, and at the same time introduces three really cool characters, all of which are unique, fully voiced and acted out by real Hollywood actors that are just really great, each and every single one of them. Me personally, I liked to follow the detective here as well. I kind of felt like it filled a little bit of the void that was left before because of Kona and Night Call. It features a futuristic world with androids where you can slow down time, and this is so smart that they have chosen to do it with androids, because it then gives you like a feature that this is what's happening inside your mind, but in reality it happens in just seconds. You investigate, you can scan areas, you can solve puzzles, and you make choices. After each individual segment in the game, you can see which choices leads you to where, how other players in the world has done, and of course, if you take really bad choices, or if things happen, or even if you chose to, you can get a very short adventure with one of your three characters. It is also fully supported by a very large cast of characters from all over the place, with some really great actors, such as Lance Henriksen, which is one of my favorites, who does a really nice extra role here for the beginning segment of one of the three characters. And Clancy Brown, if you like him, is also in this game, does pretty solid job, even though it's a little bit of a weirder situation to act out a lot. So that segment, it's hard to tell what I feel about it, but as a whole, it did add up, and Clancy Brown is still doing his role the way I want him to do it, so it's not a problem like that. It does feature a little bit of over-the-top things like David Cage is used to in his storylines, and this is a story-focused game, which you have noticed in how I'm speaking about it, but do not think that it's not very, very good-looking. It's very well-produced and with very few bugs, as far as I had from my playthrough. It's not a game that I would like to go back to, so you don't have the same type of replay value, and of course it is only for PlayStation, so for now, meaning that if you are running it on PlayStation, you're getting a good experience with it. Worked awesomely well on my PS4 Pro. However, my Pro is starting to sound a little bit like a spaceship taking off, so that kind of, you know, this game really does bring out a lot of the console, so say what you will about that. It maxes out a lot of the capabilities of the console. It also features quite a lot of intense graphical moments, and you might have a bit more attachment and ideas to this game than you do to your average game, and that's also why I'm giving it such great thumbs up. I can highly recommend this game to pretty much anyone, because if you like video games, well, then you can play this, and anyone can take part of this. Unless you don't really think that story has a place at all in video games, that's where I would draw the line, because, I mean, if you don't take part of the story here, it doesn't really offer much. So that's the only reason I would say not to play this. All other people who have a PlayStation should check this out, or keep an eye on it in case it releases, for instance, for the PC or your platform. Might not, but as I said, everyone else would do themselves a favor to play a really brilliant game that just has some shock moments, and I feel like Detroit is definitely recommended. To end up this segment of the games that I have played, I'm going to talk about another multiplayer game. For the King. It is a turn-based board game that you can play on Game Pass as well. It's also out on PC and some other platforms, and I think Switch has it as well. You take on the role as a party of three, or you can play online with some buddies and control either two characters and or one, and then you are one each. You go on an adventure, and you can choose a couple of different adventures. You can choose difficulty levels, and it's basically kind of like a role-playing game, board game, where you explore in this world, you do chance rolls, you fight monsters, get rewards, buy items, you name it. Everything is set in this fantasy world, which is kind of generic, but it does have its humor, and some of the enemies are both challenging and kind of fun. We did spend quite a couple of playthroughs before we eventually faced the last boss of the game and won. It does have challenges, as I said, so be prepared to try a couple of times and understand the system before you actually succeed. However, it does have a bit of slow pacing. It does run a little bit weird on the online version, so perhaps you would, if you don't like that pacing, you can at least try it on your own. But in general, it also has a little bit of a slow pace by itself in the way it's supposed to be run. One big negative side as well is its graphics, which is kind of silly. As I said, it has a humoristic fantasy element, which is fun, but it can also be silly, and I don't think the washed-out colors and the edgy kind of look and unclear look does itself a favor to the game. It's pretty hard to play it at sometimes, but if you've played indie games, you've seen this kind of graphics, and I think a lot of you would be more up to liking it than what I did. The sound isn't much to talk about, but it does its trick, and the controls and some of the interface things are just There are gameplay elements as well that sometimes gets me a little bit out of the game, like re-equipping things so that you have some passive abilities going on as you're adventuring, but then re-equipping again before a combat. These are kind of like annoying things. If you play Darkest Dungeons or any kind of roguelike game, you might have encountered situations like that where you just have to re-equip a lot of things because you want to maximize output, like get that maximum value. But at the same time, you're kind of just clicking items, going through menus, and it's management of a type that I don't really fancy too much. For the King is therefore, if you're looking for a multiplayer game to play with your friends in a slower paced way than, for instance, The State of Decay, then of course it is recommended to check it out. It might be for you, it might not be. If you're familiar with board games, of course, there are quite a lot of alternatives as of recently, and For the King is not one of the best ones, but it's pretty solid. I would recommend it for anyone interested in role-playing games, however, and I do feel like there is quite a lot to do here, even if you play solo, actually. So, with that said, roguelike role-playing game, solo multiplayer, it has a lot of value in it and quite a lot of time to be spent here. However, don't expect the depth that you might in some other titles. I would probably say that this is a little bit of a niched thing for a niched audience, but it could very well introduce some beginners that are curious about these things but have been a bit alienated by either communities or a long-time running game or something like that as well. So For the King is one of those that is a little bit hard to touch upon. If any of these things that I'm saying, and then after you watch some of the screenshots or trailers, does intrigue you, however, it is recommended to try it since it's on the Game Pass. But buying it will be a bit more passive there. Not saying that it's bad, but it's definitely not one of the greatest, however. So you might still be wondering what I am playing now, though. So we've been through all of the games that I have given some recommendations about, and some of the more like bad ones and some of the good ones. These ones that I'm going to talk shortly about now are not going to be games that I will give you any recommendations or grades for, just like last time, but a little bit different. And if you're wondering about the warm light going on here, it's because it's nighttime, so we'll have to do it like this for now. However, let's begin. I am currently running quite a lot of games, so that's also why this episode took a little bit of time to get out there. However, I do need material for the episode, so I have so many systems, so I'm spreading out a little bit of gaming here and there, and some of them might even be done or being long-running games, but I haven't made up the idea of what to say about them yet. Animal Crossing. What has not been said about this one? It's hard to tell. It is a great seller for Nintendo, and it's in my shelf right there, together with the other stuff from Nintendo. I, of course, wanted to take part of this, and I haven't spent as much time as I would like with it because of so many other games being out there, and you know, there's only so much time. But Animal Crossing does have some flaws that have taken me a little bit out of it. I would like more interaction with other people when I'm playing in a game like that. It's also kind of a multiplayer experience for me, and I feel like after a while you're kind of doing a lot of the farming and you know, the same thing. I would have liked it maybe a little bit more if the game offered some kind of gameplay elements together with other people, if you go into different islands and exploring and you know, hunting for relics and stuff like that. But there is like this feeling with Animal Crossing, this relaxation, this kind of thing that pick up for 15 minutes before bed kind of thing, or the summer game that you just wanted to have this year, in a year like 2020 as well, where you know, Corona and things are going on. Animal Crossing does feel a bit of a void in the vacation, you know, feeling. It kind of fills a void of a lot of things for most gamers. So with that said, I feel like Animal Crossing is one of those you guys should probably check out in some kind of way if you haven't already seen all of the videos and all the material that's spawning around. So there's very little things I can say about Animal Crossing that you don't already know. Yeah, so on that tale, I'm going to talk about an Xbox title which actually appeared on Nintendo Switch a little bit before, or maybe they were out on the both platforms at the same time, but it came for Game Pass a little bit later, and it's the sequel or remake, I guess you could say, of of Super Lucky's Tale. Called New Super Lucky's Tale in the spirit of Nintendo games. I'm of course giving Lucky's Tale another spin. I thought the regular Lucky's Tale was okay. It didn't have the Nintendo kind of stamp of quality, but it did have the heart in the right place. And with the developers now making you have a free cam, changing up the controls a little bit to make it more fluent, getting you you know, new levels and new areas to levels, and just pretty much rebuilding the whole thing to give a more streamlined experience is a treatment that we are not very accustomed to, and I just give any company who does that kind of service to their fans a very big thumbs up. And so, of course, I'm playing New Super Lucky's Tale. Game Pass, Game Pass, Game Pass, Game Pass has so much of that. Of course, when I have a service like that, I'm very happy that I bought my Xbox One X this last Black Friday. But Game Pass just has so many titles, and it just keeps spawning all these titles. And for me, who are catching up a lot with the games, then it gives me so much value. It just recently released a couple of games that has not been seen on other platforms. And like I said, I'm spreading out a little bit of the types of games that I'm playing. And as you know, I've already spoken a little bit about how I see strategy and role-playing games. I like card games, for instance. So naturally, the Crusader Kings 3 game is one of those games that I really, really would like to give a big go this time. And it released day one on Game Pass. There's no reason to just try it out. It's a grand strategy game where you start in 1065 something something, and then you take on the role of one of these kings or kingdoms. You can control duchies, councils of people, go on war raids, religion, you name it. It's got it all. But the biggest problem with these kinds of games is that the large scope and the grandness of them can sometimes be overwhelming. The tempo can be quite slow. So it's going to be interesting to see what they've done with Crusader Kings to draw in more people and to streamline the experience a little bit for us to newcomers to this kind of genre of games. It's a bit scary and daunting, I must say, but I have started up and I am the Irish ruler right now, so I'm hoping to maybe give a little bit of a more full review on Crusader Kings in a couple of episodes forward. Might not be in the next one because it's one of those long runners. Undermine. If you like Binding of Isaac games, you kind of know this Zelda, old school Zelda 1 styled formula of a dungeon with, you know, like a frame. There's challenges and you go from room to room, but it's roguelike, meaning if you die, you start over from the absolute beginning, you upgrade your character, you get some new stuff. It is very much like Binding of Isaac, but maybe with less of its extreme humor and its extreme nastiness, or whatever you want to call the Binding of Isaac style. It gives you a fantasy setting where you can choose to be boy or girl. You go into the mines and then you dig up gold, and the gold is carried on to future runs and you upgrade your equipment and so on. It's more like easy to know what you're doing in Undermine quicker, and it introduces a lot of story elements to you as well in a much more streamlined kind of way than the Isaac games does. It has its upsides, of course, but some people who like the exploration might see its downsides. A little bit hard to tell, but I must say I'm very impressed by many things with Undermine, and I might give you a little bit more of a rundown of this game and coming episodes as well. For online games, as I said about State of Decay, I am running some online games with friends, and you might know that I'm a fan of, like, for instance, League of Legends and card games and such. I have now been trying to do more casual style games, and while Valorant didn't really, you know, feature that kind of thing for me, I'm looking into other areas, and for now, I must say that there are two very interesting ones that you can find on Game Pass. One is in pre-beta something something called Grounded. If you played Rust but you don't want the hardcore experience that you can pause a game and that you can go in and out of games, then Grounded is for you. Think about like a game such as Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. You're fighting all kinds of spiders, ants, you name it, that's huge, whereas you are small. But you build things with leaves and with constructions and stuff like that. You can build your base, you go on adventures and fulfill quests, all the while upgrading all your stuff and combating these hazards, finding food, and you name it. It's Rust Light in a colorful, nice little backyard. That's the best way you can explain Grounded. And so far, I must say, I'm quite impressed by a lot of things. However, it is not a game for everybody. Dead by Daylight. Four survivors in an arena ring, one killer. Killer plays in first person, the survivors plays in third person. You might have seen this before, and there's other competitors like Friday the 13th, which was also featured on the Xbox One for free for a long time. There are upsides, there are downsides with this game, but if you are a group of friends, preferably four, trying to survive together against a killer is quite intriguing. It is very, very exhilarating. I do feel like it has some flaws, but I'm going to give you a more full rundown of Dead by Daylight as I feel like I'm a bit more into the game. And it's one of those that can be played for a very, very long time, but I will set like a place where I feel comfortable telling you a little bit more about it and see if I give it like a So, let me take a look here. Oh yeah, two more things that I want to mention. There's been very little talk about the Sony games here, but I did mention Detroit. So, Sony VR. I'm running some VR stuff, but I might not have enough time to talk about it in a while. But Sony VR is coming up in the upcoming episodes as well, and I'm going to talk a little bit about most likely Resident Evil 7, which is also now featured on Game Pass. Obviously, you don't have the Sony VR capabilities there, but there is the option to play if you want to play it in first person regular mode, which is absolutely fine. It's a great, great experience. That one is probably not going to be talked about in a full rundown, but more as a package of Sony VR. One game that is coming up that I am currently testing, I'm not going to say much more about that. I did talk a little bit about my frustrations with Witcher 1 and 2. Witcher 3 is on the way. And yeah, I don't want to spoil anything, so I'm going to adjourn this little segment and we will move on.
For this next part, I think we will take stance in looking at the industry from a wider perspective just to kickstart the thought process. So, I'm going to talk about split player bases, I suppose it's called. I was going to say a database, but it's a player base because it's players within the game. back in the day, when I started playing a lot of video games, you usually had the competition of Nintendo versus Sega. And after that kind of era happened, there was a lot of video gaming booming. Like, there was multiple consoles coming out. There was others who wanted to be part of it. You had the PCs running. They had, of course, been running before as well. And you also had the great video game crash that you can look into more if you haven't already. But in all fairness, video game industry just completely changed step by step from that era when I grew up, and became bigger and bigger and more like universal, and a lot more people started playing video games and taking part of what video games meant for society. So in that aspect, there was new ways of playing. Take internet. This invention, I suppose you could call it, started also blooming at the same time, and hand in hand they ventured into the PC foremost, but then later on also the consoles, meaning video gaming took the step out onto World Wide Web, and people could play with each other, playing all kinds of games pretty much, no matter where you were in the world. That created opportunities. But the sheer amount of video games was not as widely spread across so many different fields and genres and consoles and whatnot as it is today. The industry has kept spreading, kept booming, and it's bigger than ever before. More people playing, more different types of people playing. With all of that, it's a positive outlook, because the sheer amount of variation that you can get depending on what you like and which kind of systems you are interested in, if you have a high or low amount of paycheck, if you want high or low level specifications, if you want single player experiences more, if you want the online experiences more, the card games that I have been taking part of mostly when it comes to the online games, since League of Legends was my main game, also developed a lot throughout this time. And in recent years, it's become even more. There's people streaming gaming, just like sports. There's teams in different types of areas, with Korea being the forefront of all of this in the movement of esports. And I suppose that StarCraft was the big initiator here, and it's just been going on. And the biggest one as of yet is truly interesting thing to talk about as well, is the competition between League of Legends and Dota 2, which are two of basically the same type of games, right? But they are both very, very, very played, and so many different competitions going on, and the esports is thriving in both of these areas. So naturally, I should be happy, right? I am not. When it comes to online gaming, player databases is everything. And right as it is standing now, player databases are shipped all over the place. You take card gaming. It started with Magic only. Magic was the biggest card game out there, and Magic the Gathering just was the one to go to if you wanted a really competitive, strong card game that's gonna continue to grow and continue to evolve. There were other games such as Pokemon the card game, and I remember like a Star Wars and a Harry Potter. Main franchises all had their own card games. There's been some attempts in other types of areas of, not necessarily fantasy the way that Magic is. Many are great games, but Magic was the one to go, and it was physical. When Magic went online, it wasn't the biggest of successes, and it was very early on with loads of troubles. But that said, Blizzard, the one who initiated esports when it came to the real-time strategy game, also put themselves into the card gaming with the Hearthstone game, and it just exploded online. It was a great time for us card gamers, because it was so easy to pick up and play, and you could, like, you could start on any area. You could play against so many different people. It had all of those aspects that card games needed to be something more than what you could already get from the Magic experience. And so Hearthstone put up a new standard. But obviously, because of the success and the fact that there are so many variations of games and there are so many different types of ideas and people playing video games, there came an Elder Scrolls card game, and some of these that I talked about before got their own online versions. Magic got their own, the Witcher Gwent game got their own card game. You have probably a lot more than these that I don't even know about. Dota has their own card game, which I took part of and I actually really like. To be honest, that's where I wanted to head with this. The one game that I felt was the best one in terms of, you know, sheer quality was the Dota 2 card game. And it's completely dead now. It's called Artifact. The main reason why this one was so interesting was because it just had all of the modes that these kinds of games need to be competitive, while at the same time you could have your own internal gaming goals, which many of the others don't have. Competing in Hearthstone is near to impossible unless you're already up there. If you want to do a hard, you know, push for the ladder, of course you can do that. And many players actually got to a point where you, at least for what is in game, without having to put more effort into showcasing yourself outside and finding other areas on the internet to be able to partake in it, they lost the ability to compete, because it wasn't inside the game itself anymore, which is where Artifact had drafting, for instance, which you could compete against yourself or compete against your wallet. And there was just so many different aspects to that, which made me so sad when then the player base just decided, we don't like this payment model. Whoosh. The bad reputation killed the game. I'm not only being salty about one of my favorite games going away, but the fact that the player base from Hearthstone, as the Hearthstone boom came, just divided into such a big net, right, of different kinds of card games. Like I said, the Gwent one, the Magic one. The Magic is almost as popular now. Maybe not as popular, but it's almost as popular online, by the way. Magic is still the biggest card game out there. As far as I know, it is still the biggest one and has always had a growing fan database, and it's constantly evolving. But with that said, this is the fact for so many other games as well. It's almost near to impossible not to go onto Twitch and see a new game being pushed up to the most amounts of viewers just to next week die out. You have position swapping. There is only one consistent, and that's what I said earlier. League of Legends and Dota 2 are always up there in competitive gaming, and I guess to a certain degree also the Counter-Strike has been up there being, you know, widely popular for a long time. This is a big problem, and it really annoys me to see that great games don't really get the following. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's bad for the general consumer to have less variation, but it does mean that a lot of people are not going to get the experience for a very long time, or even if they do, they're not going to see the full potential of a game because they're dying out from what they actually need to be. Many of these games developers, they cannot continue unless they are the sole one living in that atmosphere. Hearthstone has to almost be the only one in order to be what it is today. It has shrunk in popularity, and so the game has slowly faded into something that, I mean, diehard fans are still going to play it, and there might still be enjoyable factors with it, but it's not going to be the same as it was, or what the potential could have been. For you to put so much time and effort into a game, it really needs to skyrocket up there to become something more. When it comes to League of Legends, of course, that game is always going to be there. I can't really see it. And even if not, it's been 10 seasons now. 10 years of high-level gaming. I'm going to say and set down a foot and say that it's safe to assume this was a good example of where the player base has continuously been on a high level. If you put time at day one launch of League of Legends, you are not being disappointed about being there. Even if you end your career playing a certain game, you are not going to be disappointed in what happened if you chose League of Legends or even Dota 2. And you can still continue to play them without it being that much affected. I'll put a little note there and say that it could affect you in other ways, of course, because the game can evolve and change. But then it's all about taste and stuff. If you are like me, who played that game and went to something else and have had a hard time finding something to put your time in, I want to play a lot of different games. But there's no reason for me to put hundreds of hours into a collection game. Unless, of course, the collection means that I then can compete in it. There's no reason for me to not play, look at my shelf, to play all of these consoles and find a great experience with stories and adventures and all kinds of experiences in all fields and all genres. If I'm dedicating one game next to all of this, it has to be a game that I'm sure will have a player base that I can rely on for a very long time, and that I can compete in this, not only against myself, but against others, that there's a lot of ways to compete. And this is something that the gaming industry today has a very big problem with, because games are dying out. They are competing against each other and spreading the player base so wide. And some people like this game, but some people like the middle game and the third game and the fourth game and so on and so on. Instead of having one game such as League of Legends, for instance, with 1 million players out there to challenge you, and a stepladder and tournaments and all kinds of... this subject. Instead of all that, you have a 40,000 viewer kind of Hearthstone experience, and a 25,000 viewers experience on Twitch on Magic the Gathering, with the approximate percentages on each of these player bases being as the Twitch viewer count almost, 10,000 on another card game, and 5,000 on a handful of five other card games. After a while, you have 8, 10 different card games hanging by a thread to survive, but still shredding out that player database, keeping great games from being the sole beneficiary of this area. And sometimes the ones that are the biggest ones are not the best ones. In my opinion, as I said, Artifact was the one I was hoping for, but it died out. And that is so dead right now that it's just terrible. I also like the Legends of Runeterra, League of Legends style card game, but same problem here. The developers can't really put down the money on it. They can't get those game modes, they can't get the tournaments, the prize monies, the TV shows, the works. And if they can't get that, then there's no reason for me to not go to Hearthstone. But it's not a game I want to play. This is really annoying me. And the player database spreading is not something that is just like, it's not the competition of like Xbox versus PlayStation. It's not like, oh, they have this and this, and then maybe they will have less customers and maybe they will fade away. There is such a little difference between a lot of things when it comes to these major corporations that it doesn't matter too much, especially not for the prime consumer at the very end, which is me and you. But it does matter quite a lot on the individual games there. It might matter a lot for the developer to die out to the hands of these player databases. So competition, variety, and so many trying to make games in this way is not always a positive thing. For me, it's been actually negative. It was better when, for instance, Blizzard was the king of gaming. They had the money because they got the players to go to them, and so they could put all that money into making great games for them. Obviously, we are going to swap away from Blizzard when we know that, for instance, Activision affects it. But then maybe one developer would be the next target. But since there's so many, you know, taking their cut and piece of the cake here, we are spreading out thin into many major player databases that is just enough to keep them running, which means that it's just enough for us to never get to where we really want to be with a certain game. If the game is good enough, with the emphasis on good enough, that game should be the one that most people should put their most time into if it comes to competitive gaming. Now you have, as I said, a couple of choices in each of the genres now if you really want to do this. If you don't like those games, well, tough luck. And even in some of those cases, they're still not good enough because they are still competing. In the FPS genre, I doubt that it's the best bang for the buck to go for Counter-Strike with Valorant out there, with Overwatch out there, and a handful of others that I don't even know about. Maybe it's not the best bang for the buck to start playing card games right now. Maybe we need to wait the storm out or something. If you're not a fan of League of Legends or Dota 2, choosing another MOBA is pretty much dead. I can't imagine a third one being up there. If you're like me that enjoy watching RTS and not competing in it, even that's a genre that's dead because of MOBA being so similar. If you like fighting games, well, you have Tekken and you have Smash Bros., which is a little bit different, of course, but you have Smash Bros., Tekken, you have Street Fighter, and there's probably another handful of games that I don't know about in a genre that I'm not so well versed in. Sports games, you have a couple. Like, I know there's a lot of basketball games. There's the FIFA. You have the racing game, which, as you whoop there, as you can see, I'm a little bit interested in. But I don't know where to commit. In racing games, this was the most recent endeavor in this subject, which just made me sad. I wanted one game that I could put most of my time into when I got this gear rig here. Whoop, there again. So, for you who are listening to the radio, you're not even understanding anything I'm saying about when I'm laughing sometimes and pointing. I'm pointing to areas in my shelf here where I have, like, for instance, statues, and I have, like, my chair. What I'm saying is, racing games, anyways, there's so many. It's hard to even know how many players are playing each game. It's hard to know if there's in-game tournaments. It's hard to know where you look for tournaments if it's not in-game. Are there anyone streaming events? Are there any events coming up? Are there anything remotely like how sports are in real life? Outside the digital community, as I would say, real life. Is there anything remotely like how communities in general works, or companies? Do they have a plan for how to develop these games further to go to where we need to go next? With Twitch streaming being a big thing and just not being a community thing, is there a way for us to actually compete? Is there something coming out or some ways of playing video games that I would say would make it more like you have the opportunity to partake on your terms, but still having a system for it the same way? Look, if you want to play soccer, you can start playing soccer right now. You're not going to get drafted to Manchester United unless you're young and good, but you might be in a team locally and you might take a step up every now and then. Your team might win. It might lose. It might have a community league. It might have a bigger wide area league. It might have a nation league or a Sweden league. I don't know where I'm located. What I'm saying is, it needs more of these things, but for a certain game inside one player database. And that's what I wanted to say about player databases and where we all took off with me explaining how the variety, the sheer amount of video games, the boom of everything, the splitting of the databases and all of this, it is not giving us a favor when it comes to finding individual games that we would want to put a lot of time into. Instead, you spread yourself thin over so many different things, and it's really, really sad. It just doesn't work at all for most of us. It is the beneficial thing for a lot of companies that would just want to earn money, and it could be a very good thing for the very few that succeed, but and also the players then who like that specific game, which may or may not be the way that you want it to work, but in my opinion, it does not work the way I want to. So with that said, I wanted to put it out here that I'm not seeing that it's always positive to have so many different options, especially when you're talking online games with player databases. That's all. So that was it, the second episode of Ricky's Rant Show, and I know that this episode, as well as the first one, I suppose, it can be explained as some of the starters of a lot of things, but we're settling the main line of the show, the topics, the ideas of what will come, and the content that you will be given in each episode. Given that, of course, we still have some things to iron out, and I do believe there might be some more things coming as time progress with the show and the feedback comes in, which is where you come in to the picture. Receiving the feedback and getting you ideas, also checking up on some of the things that I'm testing out, and the format and the sound. I'm making sound tests with this setup and with the headset setup and so on. And in this one, we also talked so much more games, and perhaps also a little bit more reminiscent to the story of the show, where it came from with the Rick's Reviews, now with a different focus, wider spectrum, bigger perspective, large picture, whatever you want to call it. It's different, but the heritage is there. It's still the same principle of me wanting to talk about the things that I care about the most when it comes to, you know, what I did when I reviewed. And gaming is, of course, the largest part of, so it's not a big shocker that the second episode included so much more gaming-related material. With that said, I do believe that there might be segments in each episode that is varied, even though this one had more gaming focus in each of its rants and parts. But I don't think that that is that for this time. I believe that we have already run a large course for this episode, and hope that you enjoy and that the format is settling in at you, and that you will keep watching and also supplying the feedback then in the cases you would like more of certain parts and so on. Anyhow, Undertaker is out.